Last week we were doing a lot of introduction to the historical period and some of the inner wishes of what this Kabbalistic literature is wants to achieve. And we had small text about the Torah and about what is being hidden in the Torah. Do you remember? And I think you very, very beautifully and easily kind of jumped into the text and opened it, and it was beautiful to see it. But because I understood that a lot of you don't have the background of the Sefirot, so is that true? And this is not what I knew when I wrote this Shekhinah rose everything. So you can actually jump into the Shekhinah without seeing the whole map and understanding the context. And to the people who does know it, I just need to tell you that whenever I teach it, it's always different for me. It's kind of always moving and changing. So, names of God. Names of God we have both in the Bible, that he's right, like, you know, very strong, or very mercy, and or full of, you know, power, and so we have names of God. It's not new to have names of God. And we also have So I'm just saying first names of God, but the names hold sometimes descriptions of character. For example, that he's strong, or that he's full of mercy. And so we have it, for example, El Shaddai. So we have all kind of interpretation what Shaddai is. Shaddai is, some say, from the word Shaddai, breast, which means that it comes from fertility, God of fertility, or that he needs to say Dai, which is boundaries, that he's the one who put boundaries between borders, boundaries between the ocean, the water and the beach, that he created, you know, all the boundaries between heaven and earth. So we have names that describe all kinds of characters of God. And later on, we have it a lot also in the Talmud, that they tell us that God is Adil Shemot, that he's very great and he's very big. Or we have all kinds of names. But what we have in the 13th century, which for some of the people was the most amazing thing, and for some of the people was the most unthinkable to do something like that, is to picture map of, that is being called the map of the Sefirot that you have in front of you, the map of characters of God. Really to try to understand how God is functioning in the world. And this was something very, very, very new to the Jewish literature. To draw or to imagine a real system that we can say this is how God is acting or functioning, I think, in this world. And this is also what God is. And also this is the way he's been, that he works, that we can really try to understand what God is. But can you tell me why is it so unthinkable to do something like that?
To humanize it.
It's almost like a technology. What else?
Well, this whole concept of pronouncing the name of God, keeping it unique and special and distinct and untouchable. And now suddenly we're talking about is functioning and getting into his personal characteristics.
Yeah, but it's all Pati Fim. I mean, it's never saying the name of God specifically. It's all kinds of things around it. God has this, God has that. I mean, it's a school. It has. It's not. I don't see it as being different than what has been in the. In, you know, I don't see it. Well, I don't know enough about it, but it's not like. you know, Hashem Mufawash.
Right.
It's all different things around it.
So you're saying this is like, and also the Kabbalah will say, they will call it as malbushim, which is like clothing. That through it we can imagine God or feel God or feel closer to God or names. That even, you know, that you keep a name that is that you cannot pronounce, which will be Rashen or Refuash, but also you have names that you can say. That you can pray, that you can feel closer to what God is, and how do you really feel it in the world? So, how do you really can really feel God? So, that if we try to imagine what happened in the 13th century, in the 12th century, the dominant philosophy. Is the Rambamistic philosophy, which tells you that if you want to think about God, you have to think about God in negative. What God is not. It's in Hebrew called Ta'aleh Shilah, the negative description, the negative theology. That anything by it, beside that will reduce the concept of God. And that will be idolatry of Avodah Zarah. So if you will go by the Yudim Alei Parim, that you, for some people pray in the synagogue, and Lodmu Taguf, he doesn't have the character of a body, and the way, right? He has, and Kerohei, he's like I, he's nothing. And you have to think about it only in a negative, negative, negative way. What's the problem with thinking about God in a negative way?
Social problem.
What do you mean?
Not everybody's a philosopher like the Rambam. There's the philosophy of Judaism, and then there's the way people live. And I mean, something. It's nothing. Like labeling.
It's nothing. Why do it? So it's nothing. It makes you very lonely,
it's
right?
It's an existential angst. Attributed to not this, not that, which is also an Indian philosophy, to neti neti, and it's not this, it's not that, to try to unclothe the Godhead, so to speak, to the point where there's nothing material or finite left to describe.
Right.
But it can be very.
Well, it requires some intellect to be able to abstract the whole image of God. So it's difficult for the average.
So what the direction you're going to, that it's a very high philosophy, it's very intellectual, it can, right, it's over there, and you can feel lonely.
And it's not accessible to the average person.
So it's not so. Actually, what you're going to is like that the Rambam is offering something very, very high, and by that it might be the assumption that the Kabbalah is more, which many times this is the way people receive it. It's for the people. Mm-hmm. People cannot accept the fact that they cannot reach God and they need God in this world, so they need to invest. Something that is closer to them, like in Christianity the Madonna, that you can hold, and you can pray, or Jesus, right, that I can have something that I can really see, or this is an option. Let's try to think, what else? Why should we think that we need to bring God closer to our world and to the way that we understand?
Enter into a relationship.
That's right.
that one needs, in order to enter into a relationship with the body, we need some kind of methodology to do that. And that's one of the things that the Spirit offers us.
This is a beautiful saying, and it has some kind of, it's a beautiful, what you say, which offers us something. Relationship is something very important, right? It's not something that is lower than imagining God in a, you know, in a very abstract way. To have a relationship with God, it's something that you can say, I want to feel the divine. I want to feel it. I want to have a way to communicate with it. And I want to have the way to, a way to pray in an authentic way to God, which is not contemplative to think about nothingness. This is one, but we know, Akisadia, a professor from Bali Lang University, wrote a beautiful book in Hebrew now about praying. Akisadia, very important Israeli professor, and he said that the human being, he called it in Hebrew, I don't know how to translate it, is a yesh mitpaleg, he's a praying being. That from the time that the humanity started, we have evidence of the person talking to the divine, trying to communicate with the divine. And I think maybe some of you also have, you know it from your own times. There is a need. Rabbi Soloveitchik called it
longing
for God. This is how we answer Kant, the professor. Kant, the professor, which says that you cannot never think that everything that you will think about God is inside of your mind, so you cannot think about God. So, so basically, the only way that you can communicate with God without your own imagining of it is your longing. The fact that you're missing something. That you want to communicate. This is something that takes you to the other space. So I think that in the core of the Kabbalah, of wanting to picture God in this level, in the level of Olam Hazeh, this world, part of it was the need to communicate with God. The need to communicate, the need to say, I can picture God also in this world, not only in the most abstract way. And I want to understand the divine and the way that the divine is being reflected in this world. That has to do a lot with the concept of the Shekhinah, that the Shekhinah is also a divine entity, but it's also this world. It's the Olam Hazeh. It's us. It's our human being. And the whole concept of the Chassidut, which means that we have all the news, that we have hidden light inside of us, that we are part of the divine, that the divine is not there and he created this world and he's there and or she's there or it's there and we are here. Completely different understanding in the fact that the divine is both out there and here and happening all the time between us, between the connection between people, the relationship between people, between couples, between family, also reflects the divine. That was something that the Kabbalah, a new language, they took it from the Talmud, but they developed it. The Talmud already said that two scholars, two rabbis that studied Torah together, the Shekhinah, is among them, or that Ish Leisha, you probably know this midrash from Tanvas Chatanot, that if they were lucky, they have Hashem between them, and if they're not like Yehudim, they have Esh, right, between them, fire.
Fire within us.
Because in this midrash, it's between them, in the relationship, in the third, in what is being created between the two of them, but also inside of you. So the Talmud already talks about it, but the Kabbalah developed it to a whole philosophy, to a whole way of thinking. Yes.
What I'm curious about is that, did it come from a place where it was like, in a sense, anti-rabbinical? You don't need somebody between you and God. God is accessible to the average man. You don't, because it sounds like what Rambam was saying was very elitist. Like, don't worry about it. We're taking care of it. We're the smart guys. We have it, you know, and if you need anything, you go to your rabbi or whatever. You go to your teacher, and you're not supposed to understand. You can't possibly understand. So I'm curious if Kabbalah was like the antithesis of that, but also like a response.
It's a very interesting remark. In a way, I guess it was. On the other way, it was also a very... they also believed that only a small group can really understand it. They were also an elitist of like it. So yes and no, but they were
against the... I mean, it was a movement against what was considered...
I think what happened out of it, that when the Hasidut came, and the Hasidut said, the Baal Shem Tov said that you can really learn from each person, that each person has God in, and that even the simple or the small child, or every person can really, really can reflect the highest level of God, when the Hasidut, 300 or 400 later, 500 later, actually took it to the place that you were directing to. And they came from the Kabbalah. So it took half a century to reach this level, but definitely this is what the Hasidut did. To bring God to the people, and to allow a lot of interpretation. And I don't know if you know the most famous, I think one of the most famous stories of this child who doesn't know how to talk and doesn't know how to pray, but in Yom Kippur he plays the flute.
What?
He plays the flute, and Baal Shem Tov said, and everybody was like, who's playing the flute in Yom Kippur? It's like unbelievable. And the Baal Shem Tov says, now the sky, the gate of the heaven is open. Right? So this is it, right? You don't need to be the Rambam, the prophet. You don't need to be contemplative about God and that God is not. And right, and the Rambam is the highest sefer, the highest wisdom is God. You can be a small child that has a very pure heart and understanding and want to cry to God, have a relationship with God. This is...
That's his way.
This is his way.
And the problem is, when I'm thinking of Rambamism, you can't use that in a charlatan way. You can't make that a business. You can't make that a gimmick. But when you get the Kabbalah, it turns into the popular Kabbalah. It turns into what's going on in Israel for these rabbis that are now billionaires and taking money from poor people because they're only the blessing and this and that. It really opens the door to a lot of idolatry, a lot of avodasara, a lot of nasty stuff.
Right? So it has two sides in it, right? It's kind of
I'm not sure I agree with that. I don't think it has two sides. I think anybody can exploit anything. And if you have somebody that has a certain charisma, and for whatever reason, ego or whatever, money, they want to exploit it and use people to exploit it, that's one thing. But I think that I think equally, actually, the Hasidut and also the intellectual approach, more of the Rambam, are both in many ways. I don't see any one more more in depth, more complex, but I think it's extraordinarily difficult to see God in everybody because you have to slow down so much. You have to be so here and have the ability to just see beyond the veil, so to speak, to be able to see the God in everyone. And when you experience that, you're in what Heschel called radical amazement. That's Hasidut, as far as I'm concerned. And in many ways, that's ultimately where I think the Rambam is ultimately going. You got to get to that point of seeing God in yourself and through the eyes of others. So I don't see them necessarily separate.
I think what we can take is that if you want to be manipulative, and in a way we all manipulative, we can do it in every academia, also put things very far away, can do it also, right? So, and so you're right, Steve, about the fact that that authentic, I think when we're talking about being authentic, it's always hard, and there's always mask, and the Kabbalah will talk a lot about malgushim, but it's always coming and going. And sometimes when you the most try, you lose it. You just lose it. So, but the reason I wanted to start with the Rambam and starting with the motive, because we can see this map as trying to picture God and control God. You say, this is God, and I want to reduce it, and I want to control the image of God. And we can see, which is what I try to offer, as a way to communicate with the divine, with a way of saying, ha, this is not what God is, but this is a way that we can imagine. Why should we imagine and not be totally abstract? Because we want to communicate with the divine. Because we say, oh, you're a human being, and being human being, you also have some divine in you, or that you're divine, and we are now communicating with something that is higher. And for some people, it's the most alienating thing. And for some people, it's what they really need. I was taking Kabbalah for 15 years, this is what I discovered. For some people, it's like, go away, I don't want to see the divine in the room. And for some people, it's like, suddenly I can breathe. And this is even, it's a real mystery how it's like that. It means that everything is so complicated, nothing is simple. But for the people who wrote it, and trying to see what they tried to achieve, they couldn't leave God far away. They really needed to communicate and to see how God is being reflected in people, in the world, in the nature. This is why in the Zoharic literature, they all the time they're outside, they're walking in the field, they're talking to the birds, they're talking to the trees, they're trying to understand the water, they're all the time communicating with nature, with...
St. Francis of
Assisi. Yeah, they're like that, they're really, they're trying to... they're like Rabbi Nachman said, Dali Chash, Lekol Ro'er Ro'er. Yes, lekol esed ve'esed yesh nigun miyuchad, which is that know that each leaf has a special nigun, special music, tune. What does that mean? What does that mean when you listen to it? That, you know, that the divine is being reflected in the nature, and you need to listen to every tree. That is, this is some kind of the philosophy that. That they try to achieve. So how does that work in the real thing? And I'll try to do it in half an hour, 40 minutes, and we'll go back to it in other classes also, and then we'll see it through text. Okay? And then we'll see it through the text. Okay? Right?
It's so paradoxical.
Completely. You remember I said everything is a paradox.
Yeah.
And I think I told you the story
it's
of
true.
The,
it's a true paradox.
It's a true paradox, and I think I told you that my teacher, when I taught it, my beloved teacher said, I want you to picture it, and I want you to know all the symbols and really know the map well, and then forget it. Mm. On one hand, you know it, and on the other hand, don't be trapped in it. And this is what I always tell to my students. Try to work with it, try to see, right, if that tells you something about the world, about yourself, about the way maybe you perceive God. But also know that this is, you know, just part of the picture. It doesn't try to control God. It's trying to communicate. Also, when you communicate with a person, you know that you know something about you, that you want to say something about you. You don't say everything. You don't hold everything. You don't know everything. You're just communicating. So
how did that work?
We have 10 sfirot that are in the image of the body. And each sfira has a lot of symbols that you can see in the symbols of the name of God and names of father and mothers, and we won't go through the whole names, but I want to start with the highest one. Keter. Keter is a very, very, very important sphira. Somebody knows something about the Keter? What is this sphira all about? So, and sphira is entity. Sphira, which means one way to imagine God. So, Keter, this sphira, which is the highest one, which is also being called the head. This is how you write the head?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the highest sphira, which also called Ein Sof, which means nothingness or endlessness. This is where you have, that has no color, no boundaries, the complete unity, that everything starts in it from it and ends in it. And I think this is the God of the Rambam, in a way, which is very, very important. But in the highest level, we have something that has no names, no words, no thing to me, no reducing of anything. It's not a thing. You cannot talk.
It's no thing.
It's no thing. You cannot talk it. You cannot think it. Think about it. You cannot perceive it. It's nothing.
And that's, but Kabbalah has that view of the Rambam. Keter is the same.
Exactly.
Both the Rambam. Mm-hmm.
Right. This is where they meet. And where you have the philosophers and the Kabbalistic says, Keter, this is where it starts from. Mm. That it's, you know, that the big nothingness. And this is what we are always also longing to feel, that you know, we can always expand. And that there is no limit to love, or no limit to wisdom. And that you can write that there is always a way for reality to expand. And it's always bigger.
But at that point, you're not there.
And you're not there, but there's, I guess
so
there's
when
some...
you come out,
you can start.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, but in it, you're not in it. I mean, you're not there.
Right. What you can feel is the longing. This is what Kovetic said. You feel the longing through expansion. To the fact that you don't want to be in the Sufi. In the place that is being reduced. That you feel limitation. That this is what you really... You want to... That humanity and also God feels in prison if that was not there. So Keter is the big openness or nothing. You have questions about that?
No, just concepts. So it's interesting to think.
That it's what?
Concepts that I don't think, because when I think of Keter, I think of more of clothes, because that's what it is. Or faith that it's the exact opposite. It's the opening, not the
right. It's not even the head, but the ground. The ground. Some people would say the aura.
Aura.
The aura, right? It's something that it's not in the body. Before the body, it's the crown. Yes.
So what you're saying makes me think that each of these spherot is a way to talk about human longing. How can we imagine any of these? Because I wanted to ask you, how do you come up with this stuff? But when you put it as desire or longing, then it seems to make a little more sense. So I don't know what how the others would work in this, but this is the right track?
Yeah, I think so. I think that if we think about art,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that art wants to describe something that is unknown,
mm-hmm.
That is mystery. Like a lot of the art, I just spent a whole Shabbat in the Museum of Tel Aviv, the Art Museum in Tel Aviv, and they talk a lot about breaking. There's a lot of tradition about breaking and rebuilding and breaking. Like all the time trying to break and build the reality in different ways. And when I try to think, what am I trying to achieve here? This is a longing of expansion.
Yes.
This is a longing of saying, so in a way you can look at it as art. Mm-hmm. Of art of drawing of philosophy, or art of drawing of wisdom. Like, how can we imagine something? Yes.
This is science. I'm
sure. So what's
science? It's all from the same source. It's like, what the hell is this? That's what it is. What is this?
Right.
The great scientists are small, are religious, in the sense of awe.
Right.
That there's anything.
It's a journey of researching, right?
Yeah, but it's just as spiritual as art or religion if you approach it in the same way.
Right, completely. And I think the Rambam says it in Sefer Amada. He has a book of Mada, which starts with Shar Yirah and Shar Ahava, the gate of love and the gate of awe. That is exactly what you said, that the way that we look at the world in a contemplative way, in order to understand it, comes from the need to love God. Or belonging. I'm translating belonging, to understanding the expansion, to understand the mystery of it. So, and how did they come up with it? I don't know. I just will say that it's very interesting. They went through two concepts. After we have this past, I think they try to understand how God was, how the world was created. How come this vast nothingness, this is right, the question of belief, which also the Rambam asked a lot, how come nothing you have suddenly thing? What happened? Right? Bara mitoho yishno. How do you create from the big tohu, from the translate tohu, tohu, right?
Mm-hmm. Chaos.
Yeah. Suddenly you have something. How did that happen? And they tried.
It says there was something. The Ruach Elohim organized it. It doesn't say he created something out of nothing.
So
it said there was something.
Yeah, but I think both the Rambam and the Kabbalah said that that was already in the world of creation. And they said, if you believe that everything is without boundaries, without, the way they say it is that Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve'aretz, Bereshit is already reducing.
Reducing.
And this is how the Midrash says Bereshit.
That's why it begins with the
death. Bereshit is a self-assessment.
That's right.
That from here the world has been created. What happened here?
Yeah. That's the point.
Right. So this is the right. So this is the beginning of the world. Am I too high, or is it too abstract?
No.
Very abstract.
No, not at all.
Not too.
You were in there.
We're all there. We're all there.
I think that we need to go further because there's a lot of
right. Yes, yeah. Don't worry.
We're supposed to have 30 minutes.
Oh, don't worry.
Thanks. What's 40 minutes?
Infinity. So they try to understand how the world is created, and they have an interesting understanding. They create two layers, the masculine and the feminine, which is actually goes from the imagining from the organs of the feminine, the sexual organs of the feminine and the masculine. The feminine is what is being receiving, and the masculine, right, is the sperm, what is being. This is how the imagining, very, very simple. They say God is creating first the masculine, which is some kind of abundance, of shefa, mm-hmm. of wisdom, of and how will it be created in the world? It needs some kind of vessel to hold it. If you will have a river of creation, we'll soon think about it in all kinds of ways. You will have all kinds of ideas and creativity, and you want to do it anywhere, and you shh, and all you feel in it comes, but you have no techniques, you have no methods, you have no audience, you don't have variety, you have water without ground, nothing will happen. So, from the right in Hebrew, they call it from the Elem to Olam. Ke'elem means
sorry?
Absence.
Absence. Ke'elem is absence, that nothing is there. To Olam.
From how does this process from absence, big nothingness, I, right? There is that. To Yesh, to something that is being created, you have to have Vav, which is the river, the flow, and what they see, I, Lam, and Mem, if they all have vessels. This is Midrash.
Vessels. They need something to hold the flow.
Are we also doing the male, female? Following the male female.
Yes.
Tachma and man.
Right. Let's see how would that work. For example, the first two sefirot, Chochmah, wisdom, yes.
The same problems are facing and two sons. And the vessel is
The male is not nothing.
The nothing is not there. It's nothing in a way that you cannot reduce it, that you cannot think about it. It's not, they call it Ayin, but this Ayin is not nothingness like there is nothing there. It's Ayin of like full of it. It's the unity. And from the unity, they imagine one small, in the beginning, one flow, one river, going into the world, and trying and need some kind of container to hold. So, Bereshit, Barai, Elohim, Bereshit was the pronouncing of the first letter of saying, I'm going to create. Right, I'm going to create a world, and I need a way of that being whole, of being coming into being. It's actually very, yeah.
I'm having a problem with the word nothingness. You use it also in the ketchup. Nothing. It should be really nothingness and everything.
It's everything.
It's everything.
It should be nothing.
It should be everything.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the use of the word nothingness, which is in effect zero.
No, it's no thing.
You can argue that zero is
no, it's no thingness.
That's what it is.
It's not zero. It's no thingness.
Yeah. Not even that, beyond that.
Yeah,
even beyond that, there has to be something.
Yeah.
Even if you go past that, there is something.
Sure.
You cannot have nothingness.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a fullness. It's a fullness, it's a everythingness, it's a unity of it. I think I'm translating nothingness from I, which is, you're right, it's not, I don't know.
It's no thingness.
Yeah, it's not the right. It's good. So, for example, let's try wisdom and understanding of the first two fields.
So, I have a question.
Yeah.
So, we have Kachma and Bina. Okay, so it's wisdom and understanding.
I can't hear you.
We have, I'm sorry. Kachma and Bina.
Right.
Okay, so what happened to Da'at? That kind of is the creation.
Later on.
It's Chabad. It's not in here.
This is Chabad Da'at. So, I'll tell you after the class, but not
Well,
Chabad is Chokhmah, Bina, and Da'at, but it's later on philosophy. Right. It's not in the Zohar.
So, how do you come up with an idea like Chokhmah?
So what is Chokhmah and Bina? They try to say, how does anything come into the world? First, you have to think about it. It's all about first becoming the consciousness. So, God had to think about. Think about creating the world. We have something, you want to come here, something we need to think about in the world.
Is that Chokhmah or Bina?
This is Chokhmah.
It's the first book.
It's the first stop. What does that mean? Many times, in order for my students to understand it, I try for them to imagine any kind of big, important decision that you had in life. Doesn't need to be the biggest for studying something. And go back in their mind to the first time they saw it. Not when they filled the application, not when they, already said, this is how I'm going to sponsor it, and I'm going to take loans, and I'm going right to come to you. This is not how you made it happen.
The first
time that you really thought about it.
Really, using your analogy of art, it might be, you can also say that first stroke on the page is the beginning.
Right.
Mm-hmm. From that point, you then look out and count.
But even before that, we can say, I'm going to do that. Even before it touch the
pen. Yeah, but sometimes a painter or a writer, I write. Sometimes I don't have anything, so just start writing. And then the thought comes.
That's it.
Yeah. An
empty canvas.
It's there.
No, that's already the act.
Yeah, it really is.
That's already the act of writing. Yeah, but we're talking about something that
the act creates the thought. Just the fact that you acted, there's something behind that action. It has to be something.
If you're comparing it to art, you should be comparing it to negative space, which is not negative, but it's got to be there before there's.
Anything.
And it's not nothing, it's negative
space.
You have a
canvas.
Yeah, it's the first desire. They also call it, they have two names. One is wisdom, the other one is desire, son. It's another name to this sphira. That you are opening your eyes and you're like, I'm going to write. I don't know what I'm going to write. But I'm going to paint, I'm going to write, I'm going to find,
desire before Chokhmah?
They call it the first desire, and they connect it to the first thought. They don't separate the thought from this first desire.
Yeah. We're still talking about Chokhmah.
We're talking about Chokhmah. Chokhmah is the first desire, it's the first thought, and it comes out of wisdom.
Very, very, very high wisdom.
Is this map included in the Zohar, or is it,
yeah.
is it drawn?
Yeah.
It's a good question. We know that they work with it. They never say some wisdom and went into Chokhmah. Jikatilia, which is another philosopher in the same generation, talks about it, you know, in Jikatilia. Jikatilia talks about each Sphira in a very kind of order, very didactic way. Zohar doesn't do it. But we know that they knew the Sphirot, and we know that they described it in different ways. They all the time talk about it without the map. This is their way.
When did the map come about?
The map is earlier to the Zohar. The map is from the 10th century, from a book called Sefer HaBahir. So they had the map.
They keep saying that. Who is they? I don't understand who this day is.
So, we don't know if it was Rabbi Moshe de Leon that I talked about it, or a group of people around him, within in it, or generations that some people who wrote it and then other generations kind of rewrote it and added it.
You're talking about the authors of the Zohar.
The authors of the Zohar. So the first desire is like, okay, so I feel this desire for this first drawing or I'm going to write, but then I need words and I need colors and I need letters and I need to pronounce things. And this is, if this is the masculine, this is the desire, I'm going to do that. The feminine side of it, which is a container, is understanding, Bina. How am I going to do it? What will be my colors? What will be my letters?
Practical.
More practical. How is that beautiful, that how is this beautiful, how this beautiful desire or wisdom is going to happen?
I must be a man because I don't know what be nice. I know what
Chokhmah is. What is the difference between
Chokhmah
and be nice? Seriously.
So, what is the difference? I think actually the English helps us here. What's the difference between wisdom and understanding?
Oh, good question.
What
wisdom comes from experience, right?
Oh, okay.
Wisdom is something that's collected that you conclude after much experience.
Wisdom is no
wisdom.
Wisdom
knowing.
Comes after.
What is
wisdom?
Question first.
Knowing.
Wisdom is more intellectual. Understanding is applying. It's reason. Understanding.
Wisdom questions the understanding.
Applying.
The understanding.
Wisdom
comes beyond.
A mechanic understands. A quantum physicist.
Why do you say understand? Does that mean something?
No, it's interesting. Why they're saying.
But then why are you calling that first one wisdom? Because the first wisdom comes from knowledge. Without it, why are you calling wisdom as the first?
I didn't know it comes from knowledge.
You what?
I didn't know it wasn't here.
Wisdom is in it.
So some kind of knowledge.
And
I'll just say that understanding the direction is sometimes it comes from understanding to wisdom, and sometimes it comes from wisdom to understanding. It's going both ways. But wisdom has no conditions.
It's some kind of shepherd
that you get suddenly, right? It's a wisdom.
It's a
wisdom.
It's a revelation.
It has no
condition
in it.
A
revelation.
Revelation.
It's very good revelation, also.
Revelation is good, isn't
it? Yes.
Exactly, of my high wisdom here. It's not kind, it's like shelter that you get. It's also like creativity that has no it has no conditioning. Sometimes, suddenly, you can write this poem.
Or you can,
right, it's not. And this is the only way that you in order to understand it, you have to understand it like the Big Bang. It doesn't come from understanding. It's not like, oh, now I do one and one, and I get it. It's not like that. Now I know what I want to do. I'm going to be a rabbi. And it's not something that it's like, and it might be from, you know, many years of understanding all kinds of things, but suddenly, it's like, they call, this is a thought that creates a world. Machshava yotzeret olam. This is a thought that suddenly creates something in your world.
What's your desire for you?
It's the, yeah.
Wait, this wisdom comes out of chakra?
Yeah.
Everything comes out
of chakra. If wisdom comes from chakra, then you can't try to achieve wisdom. It happens.
Yep.
You cannot
try to achieve it. You can't try to achieve it.
No.
It's not knowledge. It's like an understanding.
It's not knowledge. It's inspiration. Suddenly I get it, but I need to put it in words. And I need to put it in letters. And this is a way that I can understand myself first. When God created the world by the Kabbalah, He needed to understand Himself. Why did God create the world? Because He needed something to reflect Himself. This is why, by understanding of the Kabbalah, the world was created. And when we create something, we want actually the reflection of this first
inspiration.
We want it, and this is why you create art, and this is why you create all kinds of things, and we need containers. So this is in the consciousness level, wisdom and understanding. I have something that I want to express, and I need sentences and ideas to express it, and all kinds of ways. So this is
the level. When you express it,
it disappears, right? Or
it's burning smoke.
It's part of it disappears, and part of it stays. And without it, it will also disappear. This is why you have to work with wisdom and understanding, and it goes both ways. This is why I'm trying to explain it to you, that it's all about communicating. God wanted to communicate the everythingness, wanted to communicate, be reflected by something.
That's interesting, because we say that building the Sefirot is an attempt for man to reach God. What you're describing now is an attempt for God to reach man.
Right.
This is God trying to take the creation, or whatever it is, and bring it into the world. That's the opposite of what you said the purpose of the Sefirot might be.
It goes both ways. Right. But who wants to achieve? And
they then want
to
switch. So it's man in search of God, and God
is exactly. This is why Heschel wrote two books. One is God searching for man, and the other is man is searching for God. It goes to the same ideology. Tetel is looking for Malchut. Malchut is going. And what does that mean? That they both looking for each other. They're trying to communicate. They're trying to communicate. When Soloveitchik writes the Lonely Man, Each and Nabu Dev as a lonely man of faith, it's exactly the same. It's a beautiful we had a thing about Vina, and one rabbi said that the whole point of Mamad Har Sinai was the whole point, right? It sounds like, but the way he saw it was an answering for the loneliness of the a need for to answer the loneliness. The God one of God and of people. But they write that God wanted to say, right? They want to say, "Ani Adonai Elohim, you don't know me. I need to break heaven and to appear in front of you." And they all very scared, but they just want to have something. They're meaning of something, and they can't have it, so they do the an answer from communicating. That in that, in Mamad Har Sinai, it didn't work, both of them. Right? They had to do it again. But it's a need of communicating. So this is the consciousness level. The other one, Chesed and Gvura, which is Artwin put it as love and power, but it's actually grace and being, order. I always, the way I explain it, it's yes and no.
What are the colors? I'm thinking of this condition. I can't think of the name. People see colors.
Or
no, there's a synth.
President is white or blue, and Vua is seen. But let's try first to understand them.
Yes.
Okay. So we talked about that we have masculine and feminine, right? Which is flow and container.
Which is what?
Flow and container.
Nice.
The masculine and the feminine. And this is wisdom, Chokmah and Dina.
Well, you can't see that.
You can't see?
No.
Okay.
We get it.
You get it. So, and it's also in the image of body, it's the left eye and the right eye, both of them are eyes. And the next level is more physical, it's the emotional level. It's the emotional level, this is Chesed and Yid.
So
God, the beautiful God, not the romantic God, communicates by feeling. It's not a new concept that feelings are part of communicating and loving and being angry and saying yes and saying no. But many times, the way that you think about it, that this is human. This is human. And we are trying to imagine God without it. But actually, a lot of religious, the language talks about love as a way of, you know, understanding God. And this kind of feeling. Rambam always, in a way, also talks about it when he talks about Shara Vak and Shara Yirah. This is part. So the emotional consciousness level and also emotional level. That I feel, I don't only think about something, I feel something, and the way I feel it, the way that they imagine it was the feeling of grace.
Grace.
Suddenly, I have relief and focus.
You were saying Hesed is that feeling of expansive love.
Yeah.
And that's grace.
Grace, reaching out, but in the emotional level. Not in like that grace that I, right? The heart is like Hesed, the wife. that for some kind of way you went after me, that was chesed, avat milotai bamidbar. You said yes. The person who was that they symbolized it the most, that connected to chesed the most in the world is Abraham. Abraham was a person of saying, yes, I am going, I'm reaching out, I'm going after you. The big letter part, I am going after God, I am following the calling, I am following the heart, I'm leaving everything that I am going, right? Or to myself, letter part, or to the other, not to, to myself. That was Abraham. In many ways, the way I express it is yes. Yes, I'm going to do it. Yes, I'm entering this calling. Yes, I'm leaving. Yes, I'm going. Right? It's all this flow of grace. Going outside, wood. Right? Maybe like wood. The scroll of wood, called the scroll of grace. What is she doing?
She loves her mother-in-law. She does everything for her.
She leaves everything. It's called the Galapagos. And she's following, she's the family Abraham. She's leaving Moab behind her. And she's going to the land of Canaan. And she's giving the birth of the bee, the new nation, the new Messiah. She is Megillah, the Megillah of Chesed. Look, following, saying yes. So it's like the water. I'm going to, so if I have a lot of love, and a lot of chesed, and a lot of water, and light, and everything that is like this big flow, an emotional flow, what's the problem with it?
Flooding.
What does that mean?
Too much.
You don't too much. We need boundaries. What will happen if it will just flood everything?
I read somewhere that
the positive force becomes a negative force.
Right.
Rationality to be creative has to be floating on a sea of non-rationality. Not irrationality, that's different. Non-rational.
What is that?
Love is non-rational. It's not irrational. It's not rational. Desire. It's non-rational.
So in order,
it's not irrational because it exists.
So in order for love to
for reason to function,
right?
It's not. That's one of the arguments against artificial intelligence becoming conscious of itself. A computer can't have emotions.
I can't hear you.
A computer can't have emotions.
So because it has limited what it can create.
Yeah, which is purely rational. Computer is totally rational.
Right.
Human beings are.
Right.
Right. I pan it right once you
want. Lots of nothingness, sorry about that.
Right. Yeah.
I'm a little lost. In the characteristics that we're discussing and what the function is at this point. We were saying that Ein Sof creates or brings itself to the world, the Chokhmah and Bina, and now, and that helps create the world or bring the Shekhinah into the world, and it's also a way of reaching the Shekhinah. I don't understand what Chesed, how that fits into that picture.
Is
this a description of a characteristic of God?
Because God is also an emotional entity.
So in order to reach God, or for God to reach us, then we need chesed and gvura?
Yeah, because it's hard for us to, they call themselves the belief, the faith, and the wisdom of the heart. Yeah. What does that mean, wisdom of the heart? That you don't, and why is it so different from the Rambam? That you don't contemplate in your head without no emotion, detach myself from everything, and I'm thinking about God.
Okay, so this is a
not the way
of reaching that.
This is a way of reaching, which is connecting consciousness
right.
and connecting emotional
okay.
level, and this will be also connecting the body. Everything, in order to reach the divine, you also need to reach all the parts of humanity.
And for the divine to reach the human world, it needs that emotion.
Right. So you have to work through your body, through your emotion, and through your consciousness, and
right.
you have to connect it.
Right.
And those are the same, all one, kula kada. Everything is one. You cannot understand Abraham, and you cannot understand Moses, and you can't understand all our fathers without connecting their consciousness to their emotions and to their deeds.
So if you have understanding, you can have wisdom without emotion, but you can't have understanding without emotion.
You can't have actually anything.
Then you can have wisdom without
it. Because in the end, he will say it's all one. If you will have only Chokhmah and Bina, it won't actually come to the world.
And he created the world in order to communicate himself.
Right.
That's emotional
right.
in itself. That's emotional.
Yeah.
It's emotional, right? You cannot separate the theology of unity wants to hold all the different parts of the world. And they say, you cannot live in your brain. This is already separated. How can that be unity? What about your emotional? You cannot do it. You have to bring emotions into it. And the part of it first was be flow.
What you're saying is you have to live in this world in order to talk to the other.
Right.
Yeah,
completely. Completely.
And
yeah.
vice versa. And vice
about,
versa.
Yes.
Because we were just talking about whispering behind your back. Priests who are celibate really can't reach God.
In Judaism?
Totally
in Judaism, it will say big only part. The holy is big part.
And I'm thinking of, in modern life, people who have been academics their whole life.
Right.
They've got a BA, they've got an MA, they've got a PhD, two postdoctors, they've never done anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a lot of intelligence, but they're really stupid.
The wisdom they're talking about, the wisdom they're talking about it, the core of this wisdom, my professor has an amazing, what I think is an amazing, very, very important article about it. It's called, and it's not only him, it's in the Zohar, it's called the wisdom of the erotic wisdom. Why does that mean erotic wisdom? It's not only sexual. Erotic means that I want to feel the eros. Which is also eros. The eros, right? Which the eros will try to make you feel inspiration,
right.
God, or
yes.
and
sex.
All forms of right.
Not just sex.
It's not.
Well, no, but it's
both.
Eroticism. It's not just sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of.
What is what? But what
should
what is eros?
Is there anything else?
It's really bad. You could also be really bad. You don't talk about it a lot.
Sorry.
With the body, but what is that eros is about with you, it's about unifying.
Yes.
It's about unifying parts that I've been feeling drawn to be drawn to the other one. The other one could be the divine, it could be the creativity, it could be the family, it could be, you know, inspiration. But I need to feel it, and I feel it, and that cannot be only in my mind. It's kind of Shira Shirim, so this chesed is that it's the air like fire, ooh, I'm gonna feel it, but without, right, this yes, I'm going to do it. Abraham, when he went after God, they call it, they talk about the erotic, deep and idea, I'm going after you, the Hamza chesed, the high time you love me, I'm going after you. But when Abraham went too much, this is how we go read the story of the Akedah.
Ah,
he almost killed his son.
When
he was like, I'm going to go after you without no boundaries.
No boundaries.
I'll do yes, without no. He can lead into destruction. You have to have, just a minute, the balance between yes and no, following and stopping.
So So it's not story to be glorified. Is that correct?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think so, yeah. But I didn't understand.
Of course, yeah. That was his mistake when God stopped him.
Yeah.
When God said, when stopped him, that was El Shaddai, but God said to God.
He didn't get it.
That, and he almost killed his son. Because we know that this erotic quality also can, you know, bring us into destruction without the boundaries and without the balance. If I would be, oh, don't touch me, I'm not gonna do it. No. And I think we all know what that means, to guard ourselves so much that we go, I'm not here.
How does a male female image, masculine feminine image, relate to chesed and gvura?
Exactly.
Why is chesed masculine and why is gvura feminine?
Because here, gvura will be the container,
right,
which we say, so.
No, but gvura has a meaning.
Because the gvura means that I can be strong enough.
Okay, so say
no. Strong enough to say no. And I can hold it. And this is, and it's all, as I said, the sexual organs. Like, if you're coming too strong and I cannot hold it, and I cannot stop it, and I cannot make anything out of it, the flow will break the container. The container and the wall. And I think you know it in relationships. Coming too strong, no balance. So they created.
So this is how they call the story
of Abraham. And Tachad Yitzchak in this in the Sipur of the Akedah. How do they say Akedah?
So we have
in it the fear of Isaac. Isaac was scared. That was where we were like, saying no. Suddenly, this is almost destruction then, saying no. So you need to have some kind of balance between flowing and stopping, between saying yes and saying no. And this is the middle line. If you see that suddenly they have a middle line called Tetzelet, which is called the balance. Actually, what we need to do. How do we communicate with it? With these all kind of forces, we have to balance them. We have to say when yes and when no. How do we pray? When did Abraham did a good job?
When he
communicated and said, okay, this is a good number, this is not a good number, this is enough, this is not enough. I'm communicating, and he argued.
He stops.
I heard him in Russian. Using Abraham got the covenant, the bridge, and I know it because Noah didn't know boundaries. God says, I'm going to exterminate the whole human race, except your family, go build a boat. And he goes, builds a boat. And Abraham, he says, I'm going to destroy two cities, and maybe they had it coming. And he argues with him. But then he says, go kill your son, and he doesn't argue. It's like, what? Are you drinking?
He wants to grow like his longing.
But it also, when you think about sometimes even with your kids, and I know people in Israel using the story of the Akedah in many different interpretations to Israeli reality, and they tell themselves when do I need to say no, and when do I need to surrender to higher or to bigger needs. This is where people say they're asking themselves, it's a very hard question. It's a very, very hard question when to fold, to surrender, to say yes, to allow, and when to say no, you know what? And the balance, and how to know it. It's very, very, very delicate, and it can make your life a whole new beginning or destroy it.
Yeah.
It's a very fine line.
That's what makes you human, not a dog.
And I guess also the way they talk about God, they, when they talk about the story of the Mabul, of the flood, and God is in continuous changing, development.
God is
evolving all the time.
Yeah.
And he, and how did he evolve? Yeah. Or she evolved or it evolved? By communicating. Why did it say in the story of the flood? Wait, I'm going to put a covenant between me and you. What does that mean, covenant? Relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to have a covenant. We're going to talk to each other. We're going to have a relationship. It's not like I'm here and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm going to have a relationship.
Yeah. You hear the word that you said with maybe not to say, and I always thought it was the glory of Israel. That was always my interpretation. And then I see it written down here, and it's in the middle, and it's a tefil between two things, and it's a connection, and you said it's a balance. So, which is it?
It's beautiful. When I said about it, I mean, it's a
maybe was my translation wrong with tefil of Medina Tzuel, when they say, seeing it, isn't that like the glory?
Yeah, that's what they mean. But
isn't that what they
your
mean? But
is better, I'm not you.
Chesed, which is grace, and a chamim, which is not to pity someone, but to be full of mercy.
Empathy.
And this, a bit, when they say the empathy, or, yeah, I think empathy is a better word than mercy, in fact, it's a higher level of chesed. Because the chesed knows how to say no. It's a grace that can say, you know what, now I need to take or to go away from you. Now I can hold this yes and no. This is a higher love, and this is also something that they can say. They tell it's emotional development. It's not in the heart, but suddenly, this is why you have to feel it only in between chesed.
But they say that it's in the torso, like in the stuff, it's like in the
gut.
Not
in the
heart.
The figure who knew, in the biblical figure of Chesed, of the Tzelet, is Jacob. Why Jacob? Why Israel? Not even Yaakov, but Israel, because he struggled, because he saw the Ifi, Elohim, Vanishim, he wrestled with God and people, but a child. And that is Yashar El. Because I saw you, you know, I saw God and I saw people, and I could handle it. And I could have, this is why he became the father of the nation, of the all children, the 12 tribes, because now after he struggled with God, he's in the middle, after he struggled with God, and after he struggled with all the different forces, even with Esav, right?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, he meets his brother. What does he tell his brother? I think this is the most beautiful verse in the whole Torah. What does he tell Jacob? To Esav? Remember, he tells him, this is his brother, right? That hates him, almost killed him, right? He tells him, Ra'iti panecha, I saw your face in that, like seeing God. And I wish that you would want me. I saw Esav.
That's after he kicked him out. That's after he
came back. After he came back, 14 years, right? He comes back to Shukman, he lands in Israel, and he tell him,
I saw
your face. This is why also he could struggle with people and the stuff.
There was famine in there where they lived, so their father sent them to get the food, and that's where he meets them. They didn't recognize him.
So what did he actually say, Jacob?
He said, Ra'iti paneha, I saw your face as the image of God, to otnei, like seeing the image of God, to otnei, and what they're saying, I wish that you would accept me. I saw you as God, and you are Esav. This is why I'm also so upset at the later commentary to make Esav, an animal, and so Lord. Jacob tells him, you are God. I saw the image of God in you.
Unless he was just doing that in order to get away with all his stuff.
They didn't know.
But it's true.
Jacob is, he may be the father of Israel,
but
he's not such a
nice guy.
It explains a lot.
Yeah, I'm coming from that.
Yes.
If you read it in a more manipulative way,
that's Jacob.
No, it was still.
Oh, that's us bringing her.
I didn't know.
He was still qualified than POC.
Yeah.
Well, POC cut out of his compliments.
Of course, he was very, very, very scared. But after that, he first seen Esau.
Right.
And after that, he goes and struggle.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves everybody. And after that, he struggled. He leaves them alone and goes and struggles with the angel. So there is that even if he was very manipulative, the fact that after meeting Esau, he goes and struggles, and now there's no more Akem. Now you will be Yashar-El, you will be Israel, because you Sarita in Elohim Vadishim. So this is God tells you, this is not Jacob. So I think we can believe, I believe, that something happened to him.
Okay, can we go back to Tiferet?
Sure.
I still haven't figured out what we have Tiferet in this diagram as some kind of compromise between Chesed and Gvura.
It's not compromise, it's
some kind of
integration.
Integration.
Integration, not compromise.
So it's two forces, a yes and a no,
in balance,
are balanced by Tiferet.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Which is the middle, which is the heart, which is saying when to say yes and when to say no. It's also Keter, Tiferet, and soon you will see a soul, which is a sexual organ. They're all in the same line. It comes from. The God is very, very, very influenced by Apophon.
By who?
By Apophon. And Apophon has a beautiful
Plato.
Plato has a beautiful mashal.
Example.
Not teaching about a carriage with three horses. One is emotional. One is the consciousness. And what is the body, our desires, and ask who is holding, who is
the driving,
who is, you know, integrating all this thinking, feeling, desire. Do we have someone who does it? So the dollhouse actually does give us three integration through the forces that calls the carriage. The Tiferet is the heart, emotional. Tekel, which is where denying understanding also kind of meets. And Yesod. So now I'm going down, I'm going to the body, and I'm fast forwarding. Tiferet and Nechav and Hod are the two legs, which means the big in the world. How do I function? How do I walk? What do I do with all this emotional and understanding? And we saw that you see it in the middle, and Malchut are very, very important spheres. what? Yesod is the masculine sexual organ.
How do I really participate? Fertilize.
And Malchut is Shrina, which actually being called the sexual feminine organ.
Which is the wolf, the gun.
Accepting vessel.
Yeah, the accepting vessel, which is the gun. They believe, or they really imagine it, that what we see here is actually the feminine vessel of the divine flow that goes through Gan Eden. The way they read it, Benahal, the Sam Eden, Lashkot, and the Gan, there is a river that came out of Eden to water the garden. There is a river of flow. This is the force of creation. It came out of Eden from Tekel, from the everythingness, to water the garden. Who is the Gan? Who is the garden? We are the Gan. Next week, when we will talk about the Shechina, there is a way that we are actually a way, we boast all of that, but the presence of the divine, everything that holds reality, is in Malchut. This is a big flow. Most of the time, we don't feel it.
We don't feel it.
Most of the time, we don't feel the river. We don't feel because we don't.
Most of the people
don't feel. Why they don't feel it? The Zohar will ask. Why don't they feel the river? Because they don't know that it exists. No. They don't know that there is a river. But once we know that the river does come, that there is a. Eden, the gun that really means that the Garden of Eden, that we are the Garden of Eden, it's not a story, a historical story or some kind of a symbol. It's something that they believe is some kind of consciousness entity here, and we want to some kind of way to feel Eden. We want to feel the river. And we have ways to feel the river. What are the ways to feel the river? How can you feel this river? You feel it by learning Torah, by having, for them being with the tent of their friends walking in the field, by talking and creating new divine Torah, by discovering all the time new ideas in the Torah. For them, this is the way. And all the time, what they really want is all the time to feel the river come into the garden.
Shechina
is the garden. This is what they really want. They're really in love with the experience of being watered by the garden. It can be New Age, but it's not New Age. It's not. When you read it, you feel that this is actually how they interpret praying, studying Torah, being with their friends, being with their wives, creating, writing.
They're in love with their own existence.
They're in love with their own existence, but what they call it is expansion of their existence. That we are all the time, I think I told you Lama back,
yeah.
Right? The world is the one of the.
It's not narcissism, it's appreciation.
It's not narcissism at all.
It's appreciation of their own existence.
Right.
They're celebrating their own existence.
They're real celebrating
the existence. No, it's not their own existence as much as
it's just existence. Yeah, but they're part of existence.
Yeah, right. I think
they don't separate themselves from it. They're not
monotheistic.
No, but it's not egotistical.
No,
it's appreciation of existence. It's not narcissistic. It's it's appreciation.
It's not the I.
What?
It's not the I.
Right. Well, it's also the
us. Us.
Right. It's also the I. They're not a spirit.
I don't know.
Then it becomes the ego.
What? The one of the things that is most important to them is the chabura. There are 10 people who are walking together, and all of the lashon, all the amuletis in the Zohar, start with someone, and the other one is answering, but answering not like what's different from the Talmud, but many times the Talmud is like, I will say something, and you will say something different. Shakla and Talia, you will say like this, and I will say like this. In the Zohar, it's like jazz. You will say something, and I will take what you say, and do something with it. And they improvise all the time until when there is some kind of hierarchy. Until Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon or the five teachers, comes. And for them, when Rabbi Shimon comes, they also matter. They really believe that he reached a higher wisdom and wisdom. What he does many times is he will come at the end of the homiletics and he will show them what they understand. His homiletics are being proposed for what they said.
That's beautiful.
But what he does very beautifully is to bring it together. He has a very high quality of integration.
So he's like the conductor of the
orchestra. For them, he's a conductor of the orchestra.
Where did he live? Where did he live?
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is a figure that is a Talmudic figure from the 2nd century.
That's what I don't understand.
But for them, but the person who wrote the Zohar used this figure in order to say something in his words. So it's a mystery for us how they created this literature that that you can see all these qualities in it. Who was really the author of the Zohar? Who was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai of the Zohar? We don't know.
Then we know it wasn't Shimon Bar Yochai.
We know
that Shimon Bar Yochai.
We know it wasn't because we have Arabic words in it. Because we didn't know the land of Israel. The Aramaic, the Zoharic Aramaic is different. But we don't know, it's a mystery. Like a lot of things that, you know, it's a mystery. We don't know how come. This is why people are very in love with the Zohar, because it's a mystery. You read it and say, what's going on here? What's really going. Okay, so we didn't do 40 minutes. And as soon as I will have to go.